overview of Tanakh last week with the first half of the first chapter of Sefer Yehoshua. And what we really began was to attempt in some way to paint a picture of Yehoshua bin Nun as he appears to us in Torah. I want to add a few strokes of the brush to this portrait that we are painting of Yehoshua bin Nun. In brief, what we said last week is Yehoshua appears for the first time at the end of Parshat Bishalach, the sneak attack of Amalek. And what is it that Moshe says? Moshe says to Yehoshua, "Bechar lanu anoshim, choose men and go wage war with Amalek." He is referred to as Yehoshua at the time. We've never heard about him before. All we know is that Moshe certainly has the confidence that Yehoshua, who had never had any military experience before, would be able to do the job. And what we indeed find in that first battle that Jews wage after they come out of Egypt, what we find is what is going to be the pattern for all of Yehoshua's campaigns. Moshe is up on the mountain and he is praying to God. Yehoshua is down below waging war. There is a composite, a union of man and God working together. And we will develop this a little further. We also pointed out
it's working.
We also pointed out a very fascinating pasuk at the end of Parashat Bishalach that can be that could be overlooked, and that is that God says to Moshe, "Ksov zo tzikoron basefer," write this as something to be remembered in a book. Write the story of Amalek, and that there will be an ongoing struggle against Amalek and the forces of evil. V'sim ba'ozne Yehoshua, and place it in the ears of Yehoshua, which means that Yehoshua is going to be not only the one who will transmit Torah shebichtav, the written Torah, he is also going to transmit the oral law. V'sim ba'ozne Yehoshua, say it into the ears of Yehoshua. So the first time that he appears, Yehoshua is a man of war. He is a commander-in-chief of the forces of Israel. He is also at that same time he also becomes, or at least we have an indication that he is also going to be the great teacher of Israel. There are a number of roles, we say, that are played by Yehoshua. Yehoshua is man of war. Yehoshua is going to be the great teacher of the Jewish people. Yehoshua is the one who is going to cause them to inherit the land. Later on, Yehoshua appears a number of times in Sefer Shemot. The most significant is the fact that when Moshe is up on the... when Moshe goes to the mountain in order to spend 40 days and 40 nights on the mountain, where does Yehoshua remain? Yehoshua remains in the tent. Moshe has pitched a tent outside of the camp. Yehoshua waits there for him, and when Moshe descends the mountain, who does he see first? He sees Yehoshua, and Moshe already knows that the golden calf has been made in the camp. And he turns to Yehoshua to ask Yehoshua, "What is the noise that you hear in the camp?" And Yehoshua is not certain what's happening there. What it means, and we pointed out this week, what is Torah telling us that Yehoshua was in the tent? It means that Yehoshua was not in the camp when the Egel HaZahar, the Egel, was made. Which means, effectively, that the two great sins of the generation of the desert, Yehoshua is not part of that at all. Yehoshua is not even in the camp when the Egel is made. And certainly we know from the Meraglim, he was one of the two. It was he and Kalev ben Yefuna who objected to the negative report of the Meraglim. We also pointed out the Ebn Ezra says, and Ebn Ezra and Ramban explains why he is known as Yehoshua bin Nun. Bin Nun, so the Rambam gives two reasons. Why is it not Ben Nun, like all other people are Ben? Why is he Bin? So the Rambam gives two reasons. Bin Nun, when you read it together, it is Bin Nun from the term Bina, understanding. He was blessed with a very, very special ability to understand. And the word Bin Nun can also mean ruler, leader. Lifnei Shemesh Yinon. Yinon is a word that appears in Tehillim and means ruler. So here again, in the name Binun, we also hear two of the characteristics, the qualities that make up Yehoshua. He is the man of great understanding, and he is the man who is law, who rules, who's going to be a leader amongst men. Yehoshua is then going to appear again in Sefer Bamidbar. In Sefer Bamidbar, he appears in Parshat Baha'alotcha, in Parshat Shlach, and in Parshat Pinchas. In Shlach, obviously, he appears as Hoshea bin Nun, one of the 12 who is going to be sent to spy out the land. And it is there that the Torah says that Vayikra Moshe called Hoshea bin Nun. He gave him another name. He gave him the name Yehoshua. By birth he was Hoshea, and Moshe gave him the name Yehoshua. The problem, of course, with that is that the very first time that he appears, he is already referred to as Yehoshua. In Parashat Ta'alotcha, Moshe says, Yehoshua, Bechar lono anoshim, choose men and go out and wage war with Amalek. So the Mepharshim say that it is possible or probable that Moshe had changed the name of Hoshea bin Nun to Yehoshua much earlier. And that this was common practice with leaders who gave names to the people who served them. We find that with Yosef. When Yosef became the second in command to Pharaoh, so Pharaoh gave him a new name, Tzafnat Taaneach. So for all intents and purposes, it was Moshe who had given the name to Yehoshua much earlier in time. The question, of course, is why does it appear in Torah at the story of the Meraglim? And Rashi there brings the Gemara that says he gave him the name Yehoshua because he said, Ko Yoshiacha, let God save you, may Atzat Meraglim, from the council of the Meraglim. Ko Yoshiacha, may Atzat Meraglim. And there is a famous Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel says, why did he pray for Yehoshua? Why did he give him this special blessing? God should save you from the council of the Meraglim. So Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel says, Kad ro'o Moshe, when Moshe saw Anvina tu tanuto, the humility of Yehoshua, he prayed for him, Kol Yoshiacha, may God save you from the council of the Meraglim. It means that there is something that Moshe sees in the character of Yehoshua, that Yehoshua is a humble person. Now, certainly Moshe is not one to underestimate the significance of humility. Moshe Rabbeinu was, by God's testimony himself, Onav Ma'od Mikol Ha'odam Asher Al Pnei Ha'adama, more humble than all men that appeared on the face of this earth. But Moshe, being humble, knows that there can be something very negative about humility. It's a great quality to be an Onav. But if one is an Onav to the point where one may very well doubt his own abilities, that's bad. If at any moment Yehoshua may begin to doubt that maybe he is unworthy, maybe, listen, there are 10 fellas who say that the land is going to be impossible to conquer. We're never going to do it. You know, 10 against 1, what am I going to be? I'm going to be conceited, full of pride. I know better than those 10 Gedolei Yisrael. Humility could sometimes be a cop-out. What did you want to say? What word did you use? A detriment, yes. Humility can be very detrimental. And Moshe therefore wants to make sure that Yahushua is not going to fall into the trap of humility, which is a negative quality. We'll get back to that yet. In Parshat Pinchas, it is there that Moshe appears to asks of God that the time has come that you should appoint a man who's going to be the leader of the community. This appears in Parshat Pinchas. In other words, Moshe understands that the time has arrived for the torch to be passed. I always say it's very interesting that all of this happens in Parshat Pinchas. There in Parshat Pinchas, this is in Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Chav Zayin, chapter 27, Pasuk 12. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God said to Moshe, Alei el har ha'avorim hazeh, go up to this mountain, see the land that I have given to the children of Israel. Bamidbar, chapter 27, Pasuk 12. God tells Moshe to go up to the top of the mountain and see the land that I have given to the children of Israel. Vera'ita uta, you should see it. V'ne'esafta el amecha, and be gathered into your people. You're going to see Eretz Yisrael, and then you're going to die. Gam ata, you too are going to die. Kasher ne'esaf aharon ochicha es Aaron, your brother, die. Kasher meditem pi b'midbar tzin, because you had rebelled against me in the valley, in the desert of tzin, the medivat va'edah, when the community rebelled. La'adisheni b'mayin le'enem, you could have sanctified me with the waters before their eyes. Hey, may Merivat Kadesh Midbatzin, that's the water of the Merivat, where he should have spoken to the rock, and he hit the rock. Now, Bayadaber Moshe El Hashem Leymar. How many times have I told you people that you inspire me? How many times? I said it a number of times. I just now read a pasuk that has shaken me to the core. I just now read pasuk 15 in Bamidbar, Perek 27. Should I read that pasuk again? Yes, I'm going to read it again. Vayedaber Moshe El Hashem Lemor, and Moshe spoke to God so saying. What is the pasuk that appears throughout all of Torah? Either Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Lemar, God said to Moshe, or Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe. That always represents God commanding Moshe, telling Moshe, there's something you got to do, and I want you to transmit this to the Jewish people. Do you hear the pasuk? Vayedaber Moshe, Moshe spoke to God, so saying, you have a job. And you know what? This is the one place in Torah where it is absolutely in place. What Moshe wants of God is that he should appoint a leader. If God has just told him that he's going to die, so now he could become concerned about all sorts of things. What is his first concern? Since he is going to die, that means a leader has to be appointed over Klal Yisrael. So he says, Yifkod Hashem Elokei HaRuchot L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Let God appoint the God who knows the spirit of all men. Let him appoint a man who will be in charge of this community. Asher Yitzei Lifnayim, who will go out before them. Asher Yavo Lifnayim, who will come in before them will lead them both in their yachasei chutz and yachasei pnim, in foreign relations and in internally he will lead them. Vasher yotziyim, vasher yiviyim, they will take them and will bring them. V'lotia dat Hashem, the community of God should not be katzon asher ein lehem roeh, like sheep that have no shepherd. Just these chumashim out back there, because we're going to need a parsha in after Pinchas. We're going to go to Matot, I think, and we're going to have to learn a whole parsha in Torah over there. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God said to Moshe, Kach lecho et Yehoshua ben Nun. Here is where God appoints Yehoshua ben Nun. He tells Moshe, Kach lecho, take unto you at Yehoshua ben Nun, Ish asher ruach bo, a man who has spirit in him. And Rashi says that he can tolerate them all. The leadership, to be a leader over Klal Yisrael, for that matter, a leader of men in general, a leader of Jews in particular, requires that one have the patience to suffer and tolerate all of the different opinions. You know, everybody's a balabuas, and everybody is a leader, and everybody has an opinion, and everybody's a politician, or better said, everybody thinks he's a statesman. You need somebody who's going to be able to understand them all. The samach that yodcha alav, and you should place your hand upon him. You should place him before a loza the coin of Nekolha Eda, before the entire community. You should commend him before their eyes. In their presence you should commend him. And you should place from your glory upon him, so the entire community of Israel should hear. This is the parasha in which the torch is passed from Moshe to Yahushua. I always wondered, of all things, where is Yahushua, the one who is appointed in a parasha that's called Parashat Pinchas? Here we have, at the end of the Sedra before and at the beginning of this Sedra, the great act of zealousness, the Kana'ut of Pinchas. Pinchas emerges as a powerful and a dramatic leader at a moment of crisis in Jewish history. Here it is, a prince of the tribe of Shimon has taken unto himself a Midianite woman, and there goes Pinchas. He arises from the community, takes the spear, and runs them through in an act of tremendous courage, great strength. I don't know, couldn't one possibly ask, maybe Pinchas should have become the leader? The fact is, to tell you the truth, that for the last 38 years have passed, we have not heard much from Yahushua. The last time we heard from Yahushua was when Moshe sent the Meraglim. The Meraglim was sent in the second year the Jews are in the desert. Parashat Pinchas, 38 years have passed. Remember, Moshe is about to die. It's the 40th year in the desert. 38 years we haven't heard from Yahushua. Yes?
Hasn't he been in training, learning from...
I see. Huh?
Pinchas was a Kohen?
Pinchas was a Kohen,
yeah. How could he take over the leadership?
Why can't a Kohen be...
He's not a warrior. He's not supposed to. I mean...
Atityahu and his five sons were Kohanim. Kohanim can be warriors, absolutely. Absolutely. Why can't a Kohen be a warrior? In other words, they sort of should not come in contact with death. An enemy of Israel, it's a mitzvah to go out to war against them. Anyway, 38 years, we haven't heard from Yahushua. Who is the one that has made this dramatic act of leadership? This is Pinchas. So I once said, and we once said this in a year or two ago, a single dramatic and heroic act does not make a person a leader of Klal Yisrael. Do you know what makes a person a leader of Klal Yisrael? Years and years of preparation. Where has Yehoshua been during the course of all of these years? Fact is, Yehoshua has been in the tent of Moshe. He has been figuratively sitting at the feet of Moshe. He has been studying Torah for 38 years. And you know what? He's there in the background. I imagine that during the course of these 38 years, somebody would have a problem, somebody would have a shaila, somebody would need good advice. There was one person you always found there in the Beis Medrash. That one person was Yehoshua. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that during the course of these 38 years, thousands upon thousands of Jews have turned in a moment of crisis to Yehoshua. Leadership of Klal Yisrael is the sum total, the result of years of effort, years of preparation, years of being there in the background, years until the moment comes when leadership is thrust upon you. Yehoshua, during all of those years, had prepared himself to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, both as commander-in-chief and as the father of the Masorah. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received Torah from Sinai, and to whom did he transmit it? He transmitted it to Yehoshua. And God is the one who knows that, yes, Pinchas did a great thing, but one act of greatness does not give one the license to become a leader of Klal Yisrael. It takes years of preparation, years of doing very undramatic things. Years of doing things without glory, without any hope of being repaid for, just doing it l'shem shemayim, and that's what Yehoshua was doing all of those years. He therefore becomes the leader of Klal Yisrael. Alright, now, yes.
Where was Aaron all this time?
Who?
Aaron.
At this point, incidentally, Aaron has already passed away. He passed away in Parshat Chukas. What was he doing all of those years? Well, there were korbanot that were being brought. I mean, there was a service going on in the Mishkan every day. There was a sacrifice that had to be brought by the Kohen Gadol. I'm sure that Aaron was involved and was in the center. Remember, the Mishkan was in the very center of the camp. Moshe's tent was completely outside of the camp. Moshe had his own Beis Medrash, a pitched tent where people would come to learn. And who was there? Yehoshua was there. The Medrash says, what was it, in what schut did Yehoshua become the leader of the Jewish people? Because he was the one that used to, this is for you.
For me.
Yeah. He used to put together the tables and chairs and put them away at the end of the day. For 2 years, you're telling me to remind everybody to put the chairs back. And incidentally, now we don't have to do it anymore. But Yehoshua was the one who put the chairs and tables together in the Beis Medrash. What does the... And in that schus, he became the leader of Klal Yisrael. I mean, what does the Medrash mean? Yeah. You're not a candidate. All right. What does the Medrash mean? Does the Medrash mean that because you put chairs and tables together and straighten them out and put the sparim back, that means that you're a leader of men? What the Medrash is telling us is the path that one has to travel to leadership of Klal Yisrael is one that takes time, and there may be all sorts of unpleasant things that have to be done, but what's required is a sense of dedication. But I say even more, the fact that he was always in the Beis Medrash means that there was always somebody to turn to. A Jew would have a problem, you always knew if Moshe is unavailable, Yehoshua certainly will be there. And that's what Yehoshua did. Thousands upon thousands of people were helped by him during all of those years. Yes? So, you know what I would say? I would say in... After part of the picture that I painted last week was Yahushua as being the alter ego of Moshe. Moshe is the sun, the Gemara says, and Yahushua is the moon. Whatever Moshe was reflected in Yahushua. So while Yahushua may not have been a shepherd, but all of the qualities of a shepherd that Moshe Rabbeinu had were reflected in Yahushua. Not bad. Not bad at all. Yes. Well, yes, so you're right. So incidentally, I don't know how much shepherding they did, but you know what? You know what? We may get to that in a moment. Something occurs to me. We may get to that in a moment. We're going to see they did have cattle. They did have cattle. But there were those who were... They didn't do farming. The fact is they sat and learned Torah for 40 years. That's really what they were doing. But they were also... Huh? What about Yaakov and Yitzchak? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, okay. So I go back to what I said before. The shepherdness of Moshe is reflected in Yahushua. He has all of those qualities. All right. Nearly the final brushstroke of Yahushua. I want to learn with you a parsha in Chumash. And you may very well, it may take us about 20 minutes to learn this parsha in Chumash. And all of you are going to be thinking to yourself, why is he learning this with us? What in heaven's name does the man have in mind? What does this have to do with Yahushua? Trust me. Okay, you're in trouble now. I want you to turn in Sefer Bamidbar to chapter 32. Anybody need a Chumash? Chapter 32. It's in Parshat Matot. Lamed Bet. First pasuk. My wife remembers already what I said over here, but she still has absolutely no idea what this has to do with, in a sense, completing the portrait of Yahushua. And I think that this is one of the most significant brush strokes on our canvas of Yahushua. How do you like that? Okay. Now, forget everything. Forget Yahushua. Forget that this is an overview to Tanakh. I just want to learn a parsha with you. Now, we are at the end of the 40 years in the desert. Moshe already has waged war with Sichon and Og, the kings of the east bank of the Jordan. They've been vanquished in battle. Jews are now encamped on the plains of Moab. They can hear the waters of the Jordan flowing nearby. As we say, flags unfurled, ready for the invasion of the land of Canaan. Okay, now watch. What I want to do as we learn this parasha, it's going to be very important that every nuance... We be very, very aware of everything that's happening, not only everything that's said, even things that are not said. I also want you to be keenly aware of, in your Chumash, you will either have a space, or a pay, or a samach, which indicates that there's a pause, or a paragraph, or silence of some sort. In the Sefer Torah, there will be a... In the Sefer Torah, there's going to be a space. Umikne Rav Hoya Livnei Ruvain, the Livnei God, Otsum Ma'od. A lot of cattle. The sons of Ruvain and the sons of God had a lot of cattle, Otsum Ma'od, very mighty. Vayiru et Eretz Yazer, and they saw the land of Yazer, v'et Eretz Gilad, and the land of Gilad, v'hinei, and behold, Hamakom, Mekom Mikneh, the place, is a place for the grazing of cattle. East bank of the Jordan, real rolling green hills, whispering brooks, great land for grazing, and they have cattle. Vayavo b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven, the sons of Gad, the sons of Reuven came, Vayomu, and they said to Moshe and to Elazar HaKohen, El Nesiei Ha'edah Lemor, and to the princes of the community, so say. Now remember, we are talking now about, I would say, a major conference is taking place. This is not simply some kind of chance meeting. We're talking about the heads of the tribe of Gad and Reuven are standing before who? Before Moshe, before Elazar, and before the princes of all of the rest of the tribes. What did you say? That question, incidentally, didn't occur to me until recently, and I think we should keep that in the back of our minds. Where is Yoshua? I'm not sure that I have a good answer yet. Or maybe I have a very good answer. I'm not sure. Okay. Maybe he may be one of the princes, but why he's not mentioned specifically, I don't know yet. All right, so here we have this Ve'idat Pisgah. You say that in English? A summit meeting. A summit meeting of all of the leaders. And they said the following. Atarot v'divon v'yazer v'nimrod v'cheshbon v'elolei usvom unavo uva'on. All of those are the names of places. Names of cities on the east bank of the Jordan. Atarot v'divon v'yazer v'nimrod v'cheshbon v'elolei usvom unavo uva'on. Or Oretz.
King of Oretz, alright.
Now, so the sons of God and Reuven say, the land that God smote before the congregation of Israel, this land that has been conquered is grazing land, and your servants have cattle.
What?
So what?
The
land got a plan. Yeah, well, what's their plan? Do they say it? But what did they say?
It's a good place to be.
They say all of this land, it's grazing land, and we have cattle. In your chumashim, you will find one of two things: either a samach, or you will find a space.
Right.
All right. Let's say that this space is very pregnant with meaning. All right. What does it mean?
Dead silence. Not only dead silence, there are moments at which silence can drive you mad. Here we have Moshe, Elazar, all of the princes of the tribes, they're all standing over there. And can you imagine the heads of God and Reuven said, Mataros and Divan and Svam and Nebo and Olo, this is grazing land and we have cattle. So they expect some kind of response, right? What should be the response? Yeah. The only thing is, as long as Moshe is there, nobody is going to respond before Moshe. Do you know what Moshe does? And you know this is pointed out, number one, by the samach, or the pause. Moshe stands there with a classic poker face. No emotion. Zero. Do you know what he wants B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven to do? To twist in the wind. He has given them enough rope to hang themselves. Now, do you know what the fact really is? They're afraid to utter the words in the presence of Moshe. Moshe, we don't want to cross the Jordan. We have cattle. This is grazing land. We want to stay here. They know that to Moshe, they can't say that. For a lot of reasons. Moshe, for 40 years, his great undertaking has been to bring Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. If anything, they may very well be aware that the great tragedy of Moshe's life is that he sees the land but will not be able to cross into the land. Say, here come young whippersnappers who were under age 20 when Moshe Rabbeinu was taking Klal Yisrael miraculously out of Egypt, and they're going to tell him, you know what, we don't want to go. They can't say that. They know that. So therefore they stand before Moshe and they say, Ataros and Divon and Svam and Nebo and Em'ole, the land that was conquered, it's grazing land, and we have cattle. Watch. Do you know what's happening? They seem to be saying, Moshe, you get the hint, Moshe? You know what I mean, Moshe? You get it, you know? Moshe? Poker face. No, sorry. You guys are going to have to say the ugly thing out of your mouths. That's why there's, first of all, the pause, and then Vayomru, and they said. They know already, can you imagine the kind of silence over there? Try and imagine Chavez, Bush, Baker, Levy, and all this, Shamir, Sharon, and somebody asks some kind of a question, and like, the silence becomes very, very unnerving. So they know that they're going to have to break the silence.
Are those the only tribes that had cattle? Weren't there the other tribes?
So the Gemara and the Midrashim talk about this, that for some reason it turned out that they had more cattle than others. Yeah, I don't want...
It seems like a rebellion.
No, but they had cattle, that's the fact. Maybe others had cattle too, but were perfectly happy to go into Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so they said it. They knew they had no choice, so they said it. In Motzanu Chen Beinecho, if we have found favor in your eyes, Yutan et ha'aretz hazot la'avadecha, let this land be given to your servants. La'achuza, it gets worse as they go on. La'achuza as an inheritance, and finally they say it out. Al ta'avideinu et hayarden, don't take us across the Jordan. Now, the one who responds is Moshe. This is going to be the greatest explosion of anger that Moshe demonstrates in all of Chumash. Here it begins. Now listen, this is an outburst unparalleled. Vayomer Moshe livnei God v'livnei Ruvain, and Moshe said to the sons of God and to the sons of Ruvain, Ha'achechem yavol la'milchomo, your brothers will go out to war, v'atem teishvu po, and you're going to remain here. This is one of the famous psukim in all of Torah. Your brothers are going to go off to war, and you're going to remain here. Is there going to be an unequal division of historic responsibility? You're going to sit over here, and they're going to cross the Jordan and go wage war. And why are you going to move the hearts of the children of Israel, may avor el haaretz, from crossing to the land Hashem that God gave them? Ko osu avoteichem, this is what your fathers did, b'sholchi otami kodesh barnea, when I sent them from kodesh barnea lirot et haaretz, to see the land. He's going now going to raise the specter of the Meraglim, and he's going to describe that terrible tragedy to them, and he's going to accuse them. You're a bunch of Meraglim. You know, incidentally, that's the worst thing you can call people in the day, at this moment in history, or for Moshe to call somebody Meraglim, the worst thing. And he describes it. This is what your fathers did. By Galuat Nachal Eshkol, they went up to Nachal Eshkol. By Yiru et Haaretz, and they saw the land. By Yoniu et Leiv Bnei Yisrael, and they moved away the hearts of the children of Israel. Vilti Boel Haaretz, not to come to the land Hashem Atama and Hashem that God gave to them. And you know what happened? Remember, he's talking to these people who are at least 61 years younger than him. Moshe is 120. Anybody who's living right now was under 20 when they came out of Egypt. These are young people. This is a different generation.
V'yichaf Hashem b'yom ahu, and God got angry on that day. V'yishav aleim, or he swore so, saying, im yiru ha'anoshim ha'olim mimitzchayim, that those people who came out of Egypt, miben esrim shon of omala, from age 20 and further, will not see et ha'adama, the land, Hashem ishbati l'Avrom, l'Yitzhak, l'Yakov, the land that I swore to give to Avrom, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov. Ki lo milu acharai, because they did not follow me. Guilty except for Kolev ben Yefune Haknizi, v'Yahushua bin Nun. Except for Kolev ben Yefune Haknizi, v'Yahushua bin Nun. I am wondering, it's possible that they may not have wanted to speak in the presence of Yahushua. And this only occurs to me right now, this was the question, why doesn't Yahushua appear here? Because, listen, they may very well think that, you know, Moshe is going to die, right? He's not crossing the Yarden. Who's the commanding chief that's going to take us across the Yarden? Yahushua. As far as Yahushua is concerned, you know what we are? We're absent without leave. His army is going to be smaller. I mean, they have a feeling that with Yahushua bin Nun, they don't stand a chance. I mean, what are they going to come to Yahushua bin Nun and say, listen, commander, on the Faket, we don't want to cross the Jordan. Now Moshe is reminding them, except for Kolev ben Yefune Haknizi and Yeshua ben Nun, ki milu acharei Hashem, because they followed God. Vayicharav Hashem b'Yisrael, he repeats it again, and he says, God got angry with Israel, vayinihem b'midbar, and he caused them to wander in the desert, arboim mishona, 40 years, atom kol hador, until the end of that entire generation, ha'oseh harav b'enei Hashem, that did the evil in the eyes of God. And here comes the terrible accusation. V'hinei kamtem tachat avotechem, you have arisen in place of your father's tarbut anashim chataim, a community, a society of sinners, lispot od al charon av Hashem, to add even more to God's anger and Yisrael toward Israel. The third time that he speaks about God's anger. Ki teshuvun mi'acharav, you turn back now from behind God. V'yosaf od l'hanicho b'midbar, he's going to leave you all in the desert again. V'shichatem l'chol ha'am hazeh, and you will have destroyed this entire people. This is an outburst. Longest speech that Moshe makes in such anger, and he raises God's anger. We can imagine what's going on. Here it is. They're on the very threshold of the great move into Eretz Yisrael, and God forbid this great and dramatic change in all of Jewish history can, God forbid, be aborted at the last moment because B'nai Gadu, B'nai Ruvain, you understand, they have cattle and this is grazing land. No other outburst of this sort by Moshe. Yes. Very good question. How come in the end we find out that half the tribe of Manasseh also ends up on the east bank of the Jordan, and they don't appear here at all? So I'll just give you a brief Meshachachma that Meir Simcha says, that Moshe was a genius, and I'm going to point it out over here. I mean, you need me to show you that Moshe was a genius, but I'm going to show you Moshe as an educator of the highest order, par excellence. I'm going to show you Moshe in all of his brilliance, just in the psukim of the Torah. And part of the brilliance of Moshe is the half a tribe of Manasseh. At the end, you know what Moshe decides? Moshe is afraid that if B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven are going to remain on the east bank of the Jordan, and the other 10 tribes are going to be on the other side of the Jordan, what will happen will be two people who will, in the course of history, lose touch with one another. So you know what Moshe Rabbeinu does? He looks for a tribe. He looks for a tribe that has profound and deep Ahavat Eretz Yisrael. And he wants to convince that tribe, if half of you will live on one side and half on the other side, there will be a constant movement and a relationship between one side and the other. In a sense, he's really looking for people who are going to be Shlichei Aliyah, who are on the other side of the Yarden. Who does he choose? He goes to
to the children of Yosef. Why to the children of Yosef? Because the Medrash says about Yosef that Yosef was Ohev Eretz Yisrael, loved Eretz Yisrael. Number of reasons. Here, he's been who knows how many years as a little boy, as a young man, a young adult, he's been for years in Mitzrayim. How do they describe him to Paro? There was a Nar Ivri, a Hebrew boy, was with us in prison. Who is the one that tells his brothers at the very end of Sefer Bereishis, Pakod Yivkod Hashem Elokim Etchem, God is going to remember you. He's going to take you out of Egypt for Ha'alitem, you should take it, that's Motai, my bones, with you out of Egypt. What is it that Moshe does at the last minute as they're ready to move and march out of Mitzrayim? What does Moshe do? He goes and he raises the casket of Yosef in order that Yosef should be brought and buried in Eretz Yisrael. Yosef is the great Ohev Eretz Yisrael. So Meshech Chochmah says that Moshe goes to one of the tribes. Who are the two tribes of Yosef? Menashe and Ephraim. I imagine Ephraim he doesn't go to because Ephraim is the tribe of Yehoshua and they're all going to follow Yehoshua into Eretz Yisrael. So he goes to Menashe and he says, Menashe, in the longer view of history, we need part of your tribe on the east bank, part of your tribe on the west bank. And you know what? The two of you together are going to maintain, yes, the kesher, the bond between both sides of the Jordan. Beautiful Meshech Chochmah. And that's why they're going to appear at the end of the parasha. All of a sudden, the half the tribe of Menashe appears out of nowhere. But wait, we have to... Do you know why? Because literally, or figuratively, they are speechless and they are taken aback. And you're going to see, what is the first word? Vayigishu elav, and they drew close to him, vayomru, and they said. Does it mean they went off someplace? Do you know what vayigash always means? Vayigash means when you begin to talk to somebody and there is great fear and trepidation. Vayigash elav Yehuda, when Yehuda goes to speak to Tzofnas Paneach in the hope of convincing him to let Binyamin go. Or when the wives and the children of Yaakov come before Esav, it says vatigashna. Did they go any place? They didn't go any place. But they have been taken aback by the outburst, the onslaught of Moshe. They drew close by Yomru and they said, okay, Moshe, let's strike a deal. Gidrotzon nivnele miknenu po, we are going to build corrals for our sheep here, for Odin l'tapenu, and cities for our children. And we're going to go armed before the children of Israel. We're going to go and cross the Jordan and we're going to wait for, what do you think? We're going to stay behind and let them go fight. Until we bring them to their place. Our children will live in the fortified cities, Mipnei Yoshvei Haaretz, because of the inhabitants of the land. And we're going to leave our children behind. We'll put them in fortified cities. And then we're going to go, and we're going to wage war for the children of Israel. Lo noshu v'el batenu, we will not return to our homes. Ad hitnachel b'nei Yisrael ish nachlato, until every last Jew is going to get his inheritance in the land of Canaan. Because we are not going to take an inheritance with them, the other side of the Jordan and further, which is the West Bank. Because our inheritance has already come to us, we have received Eber HaYarden to the east. Okay? Is there a pause in your sefer now?
Yes.
Yeah? A pay.
Pay.
A pay. Okay. It means that this parsha has ended, and our new parsha is going to begin, and we're going to find Moshe now as the master educator. Because the fact is, while all of this seems very fine, we're going to go out, fight for Israel. We're not going to go back until we have conquered all of the West Bank, and until every Jew has his Nachala. But there were
a number of serious, serious flaws in what they had said. Flaw number one, terrible, terrible flaw, was in the first statement that they made. And we've talked about this once. They were going to build corrals for our sheep and cities for our children. Is that the order? Is that the order? And those are the priorities. I'm going to build garages for my cars and bedrooms for my children. Shame kicking, they eyes, you understand. These are the priorities. And then you know what? There's another problem in everything that was said by B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. You know what the other problem is? We're going to cross the Jordan. We're going to fight. We're going to go armed. We're going to make sure that every Jew gets his nachala. What's going on over there? Haven't once heard from them in this last speech of theirs. Im Yetz Hashem, Be'ezras Hashem, B'siyata D'shmaya, Zol Da'ibishter Helfen, God in Himmel be with us. We're going to fight, we're going to go, we're going to come. What's happening over there? What's happened to B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven? Moshe understands, I'll tell you, if it would have been any one of us, we would have lashed out with another attack at B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. And we would have told them, what in heaven's name has happened to you? What's happened to your priorities? You got everything all messed up. You're more worried about your behemoths, your cattle, your sheep. Your children seem to be second. What's going on with you? Your decisions are going to be made on the basis of your cattle or on the basis of your sheep. Wait, you're going to go live someplace because it's good for your sheep? Or what about your kids don't need it as a yeshiva or a day school or a gun or a metapelet? What's going on over here? Wait a minute. Let's leave your feminism for a little while.
There's another problem.
Yes?
They don't talk about
it.
They're going to have to leave some men behind.
So I'm assuming that they're going to leave a token force in the Arei HaMitzar. In the fortified cities, they're going to leave a token force of men who are going to protect them. Because really, we're going to find out later, I think that they have 40,000 men who cross. Now, 40,000 men.
I thought I wanted to send a token force to fight.
No, I'm sorry, it doesn't say that. It says, Anachnu Necholetz Chushim Lifnei B'nei Yisrael. We're going to go out there and fight. No, okay, wait, just wait. Okay? Yes? When? So I imagine that what happens is that, there are changes. Yeah, and the changes are going to be reflected in there can be possibilities of changes of borders, you know, pieces of territory, for tribes, peace, Middle East, you know, all of these good things can take place. And all that it means is that there'll be more pieces of land for tribes. Yes?
They have made a concession.
Yes?
Willing to send men to fight and fight
right.
The land. But they're consistent with their first statement that they made. They were then important, the cattle were then important in their first statement.
Yes.
They again restate the same.
You are absolutely right. In their first opening statement, everything is cattle.
Yes.
Everything is cattle. This land is grazing land and we have cattle. All right. Now I say, would I be the one to respond to them now? I would have gotten even angrier than the first time around. For the two reasons that we state. Number one, their cattle, more important than their children. And second, God is absent. God is absolutely absent. Moshe, watch Moshe. Just listen to what he says. And you're going to see Moshe as the brilliant but subtle teacher. There are certain things that you teach people not by getting angry with them or hitting them over the head, but what you do is, very subtly, you get the message across. Watch Moshe. Vayomer aleihem Moshe. Moshe said to them, Im ta'asun et hadavar hazeh, if you will do this, Im teicholzu lifnei Hashem lamilchama, if you will go armed before God. Watch how many times this is going to be repeated. If you will go on before God to war, for avalachem kol chalutz and all of your armed men will cross as hayarden, the Jordan lifnei Hashem before God, be'ezras Hashem, b'siyata d'shmaya. Ad horishoet oivov miponov until he will cast out his enemies from before him. Vinich bishoharetz, and the land will be conquered zum dritten Mal, for the third time with Hashem before God. V'achar toshuvu, and afterwards you will return. Then, if you do that, v'hinitem nekiyim, you will be innocent in the eyes, me'Hashem u'mi'Yisrael, from God and Israel. You will have done, you will have done the right thing. Then this land, the east bank of the Jordan, will be your inheritance, lifnei Hashem, zum ferdenmol, before God, says it for the fourth time. V'im lo tasun kein, and if you don't do this, hinei chatosem Hashem, then you will sin before God, utu'u chataschem, and know your sin, asher timtza etchem, whatever is going to happen to you afterwards is going to be the result of this terrible sin. Binu lachem orim letavchem, build cities for your children, u'gedeirot litzona achem. And you see, he changes the order just very subtle, doesn't give them any speeches, he doesn't get angry with them, doesn't give them a lecture, it's just very subtle. What we're going to have to see is, do they learn the lesson? V'ayotze mipichem, whatever comes out of your mouth, tasu. Now watch. Here, there is no pause. B'nei God are going to be, and B'nei Reuven are going to be speaking. Now there's no pause, there's no samach, there's no pay, because there's been no confrontation. And therefore the conversation or the communication between B'nei God and B'nei Reuven and Moshe can now be smooth. They're not taken aback. There hasn't been a terrible silence. It's been a very pleasant, the first pleasant conversation that they've had with Moshe, or that Moshe has spoken to them, and therefore everything flows very smoothly. And more than that, instead of the plural, it's the single, Vayomer B'nei God U'B'nei Reuven. B'nei God and B'nei Reuven say there's a unity amongst them. In general, the air has been cleared. There's a sense of camaraderie, and it's much easier. Everything's flowing much easier. So in other words, what I want to point out is, when you read a parasha in Torah, you have to be aware that there's a great deal that is conveyed to us either by a pause or by a lack of a pause. Also important. And certainly when the lack of a pause comes after three pauses that preceded it, and each pause is an indication of tension in the air. Now it's smooth. Watch. Vayomer b'nei God b'nei Reuven said to Moshe, Avodecho yasu kasher atolim letzaveh, your servants will do as my master commands. Tapenu nafshenu miknenu v'chol behemtenu. Have they learned one of the lessons? The children are where the children belong, before the cattle. Tapenu, our children, our wives, our cattle, and all of our animals will be there in the land of the Gilad. Your servants will cross every armed one. They're talking like begging already, you know. Lifnei Hashem, Bezrat Hashem, they will cross before God. La milchama, kasher adoni dover, as my master speaks. Now, Moshe, we've heard you. Moshe, we got the message. Kibalnu et ha sheder. Huh? Just one moment. Watch. You know, look at the next pasuk. Vayitzav lehem Moshe et Elazar ha-Kohen ve'et Yehoshua bin-Nun ve'et Roshei ha-Matot lefnei Yisrael. You know who brings in Yehoshua over here? Moshe is the one who brings in Yehoshua. Because Moshe knows that Yehoshua is the one who is going to lead them across the Jordan. They may not have wanted to speak in the presence of Yehoshua, but now that the air has been cleared, and Moshe knows that he's not going to be there to collect on their promise. Do you know who's going to be the one that's going to have to have to make sure that they're going to keep their word. That's Yehoshua. He brings Yehoshua into the picture now. And you know what the rest of the parasha is? He's going to repeat in the presence of all of the parties the conditions, the treaty, the chozeh, the contract that is made between them. If you cross the Jordan, all of your armed men, and you're going to fight, and you're going to wage war, then the east bank of the Jordan will be yours. And if you don't, and incidentally, the Gemara learns from this parasha, the Gemara learns how a legal condition is supposed to be made. You have to express both sides of the coin. You have to be clear. If you do such and such will happen. If you don't do it, and here what's fascinating is, if you're not going to cross the Jordan, and you're not going to wage war, you're not going to have the east bank, but you know what? You're going to have a share in the west bank. The Chok HaShvut, every Jew, whether he fights for Eretz Yisrael or not, has a share in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And so he goes through all of the conditions. Maybe we'll go another few psukim. What does it? Vayomer Moshe Aleihem, Moshe said to them, "Im yavru b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven yitchemet hagarden, if b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven will cross with you the Jordan, kol chalutz l'melchama, every armed one to war before God, v'nich b'sha'aretz ufnechem, and the land will be conquered before you, u'netatam lehem, then you should give them Eretz HaGilad, the land of Gilad la'achuza, give them that land as an inheritance. V'im lo yavru, chalutzim yitchem, if they don't cross over and wage war, then they get an inheritance with you in the land of Canaan. And B'nei Gad U'B'nei Reuven answered, and they said that Asher Dibar Hashem al Avadecha, what God said to your servant, Kein Naseh, so we will do. Nachnu Navar Chalutzim L'Fnei Hashem, we will cross on before God to the land of Canaan. V'Tonu Me'eva La'Yadeh, we will have our inheritance on the other side of the Jordan. Now, by Yitam Lehem Moshe Levnei Gad Levnei Reuven Velachatzi Shevet Menashe Ben Yosef. This is where the Meshech Chachma says it. Because it says Menashe Ben Yosef. Why did it have to say Ben Yosef? And where does Menashe all of a sudden appear out of the woodwork? Like, where was he all along? So that's why he says this is Moshe, the great educator that wants to make sure that there's going to be a constant relationship between the East Bank and the West Bank. In other words, if somebody from Reuven or Gad has to send a letter to somebody on the West Bank, so you know that there'll always be somebody from Menashe who's going to be crossing the Jordan. So you bring him bring him the letter, and you save the stamp, and you know it gets there quicker. Yeah, they knew already. There was a constant coming and going. Now wait. Okay. Just one. What does this all have to do? What does this all have to do with Yehoshua? Okay, so we've added that Yehoshua is the one that's going to be in charge. There's much more over here. I'll ask one question, and if you remember this from a shiur that I said a few years ago, just raise your finger, that's all. But otherwise, you're being tested right now. Has Moshe taught B'nai Gad u'B'nai Reuven all the lessons that they have to be taught? Play that smile. Huh? What lesson haven't they been taught yet? Their punishment is to be in Eretz Yisrael. Eric, where we will discuss what indeed is the status of the east bank of the Jordan. The land where were they living in Eretz Yisrael, or were they not living in Eretz Yisrael? We're going to see in certain respects this was Eretz Yisrael, just like the West Bank. In other words, the concept of Shtei Gedot LaYarden, two sides to the Jordan, but we will deal with that separately. I just want to deal with one question now, and that's going to be important. And there are a number of things we're going to learn from it. So, did Moshe finish all the lessons that he had to teach B'nai Gad u'B'nai Reuven? All right. You have failed
just like every other class that I ask the question to, you have failed, you failed miserably, and it's going to take you a long time before you will even be able to rise from this failure. Let me ask you one question. Is the correct order children, wives, and cattle? Do children precede wives, or should wives precede children? In the order of priorities in a person's life.
Women and children.
Wives, why were you afraid to say this? Why did all of you remain silent when Moshe tells them, Tapenu, our children, or they said, Tapenu, our children, Noshenu, our wives, Miknenu, our cattle, and all of our behemoths. I mean, wives are next to all of our behemoths. That's why I want to show you now and demonstrate to you now two things. Number one, that Moshe is the great teacher, and when our rabbis tell us that a Gadol b'Yisrael does not leave the world without having done everything that he has to do. I'm going to show you that. I'm also going to show you what Yehoshua is, that Yehoshua is the great faithful student of Moshe. And I'm going to demonstrate maybe the most important thing of all. One cannot understand truly a parsha in Chumash or a pasuk in Chumash or in Tanakh without knowing the totality of Tanakh. Watch. Two things I'm going to show you, and with that we close. Go to Sefer Devarim. Parashat Devarim. Parashat Devarim. Chapter 3 in Sefer Devarim, Pasuk 16, Shvi. Moshe is telling them everything that's happened in the desert. Sefer Devarim is his final speech. He talks about the conquest of the East Bank. I'm beginning to read at Shvi. V'laruveni v'lagadi natatin min ha-gilad v'at nachal Arnon. Moshe says, to Reuven and Gad I gave from Gilad to Nachal Arnon, toch ha-nachal u'gvul, in the valley itself, v'ad yabo ka-nachal gvul b'nei Amon, v'ha-rava v'ha-yarden u'gvul, mi-kineret v'ad yam ha-rava, yam ha-mela, tachat ashdod ha-pizgah mizrach. In other words, from the Kineret down to the Yam ha-melech, but on the east side, I gave that to Reuven and to God. All right? V'atzavetchem ve'et ha'il le'mor, and I commanded you at that time, saying, Hashem Elokechem no'atam lachem et ha'aretz hazot l'dishta, God has given you this land as an inheritance. Chalutzim ta'avru l'fnei achechem, go on before your brothers, b'nei Yisroel, kol b'nei chayil. The next pasuk. Rak. Yesheichem. Tapchem. Umiknechem, your wives, your children, and your cattle. Do you know what happened in the parsha before? Moshe, as the great educator, knows, you know what? If you've taught people two lessons during the course of a day, that's enough. But he knows, one lesson I still have to teach them. And yes, Hashem, there'll be time. Moshe doesn't forget. In other words, if I taught them, first of all, that you're going to have to cross the Yarden, I mean, you're not going to, Achichem, your brothers are going to go out to war and you're going to remain here. Nonsense. Cannot be. Your cattle come before your children? What's going on over here? And what? No Bezach Hashem, no Besiata Dishmaya. You know what Moshe Rabbeinu decides? Enough lessons for one day. But there's still one that I owe them. And I'm going to get this one across very subtly, very subtly. Now he tells them, what are you talking about? And it's said without anger. What do you think? Children come before wives? No. That's not the order of priorities. He remembers his last speech, his last time he's speaking to B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, he tells them, Rak Nesheichem, the Tavchem, U'miknechem, your wives, your children, and your cattle. Very well. one final pasuk, and that's going to be the end of this year. Let's go to chapter 1 in Yehoshua. Last week we learned until pasuk 10, pasuk 10, 11,
14.
Wait, don't jump the gun on me. Pasuk 11 and 12, Yehoshua says, prepare yourselves, we're crossing the Yarden. Pasuk 12, in Perek Aleph of Yehoshua, V'laruveni v'lagodi v'lachatzi shevet Menashe Omar Yehoshua Lemar. Yehoshua now speaks to Reuven, God, and half the tribe of Menashe. Zochoret hadavar, remember that Asher tzivetchem Moshe Eved Hashem Lemar, what Moshe, the servant of God, commanded you. Hashem Elokeichem Meneach Lechem, God is going to give you peace, v'natam lechem et ha'aretz hazot. Neshechem tapchem u'miknechem yeshvu ba'aretz Asher natam lechem Moshe pe'ever ha'yarden. Your wives, your children, and your cattle will remain on the east bank. Do you know what we see over here? Who was sensitive to every nuance of what Moshe said? His great student, Yehoshua. His great student, Yehoshua. Is there any question now why Yehoshua becomes the great teacher of Klal Yisrael following Moshe? Make no mistake. One should never make the mistake of thinking that Yehoshua becomes the great commander-in-chief, the great warrior, the one who is going to cause them to inherit the land. Yehoshua was always there. The Rosh Ha'eda, the Nesiim, may not have been there when Moshe said in his last statement to Bnei God of Reuven, when he put wives before children. But Yehoshua was there, and Yehoshua picked it up immediately. He understood. And therefore, when he now, at the last moment, as they are mamish, preparing to cross the Yarden, he repeats the great lesson of Moshe. The Sheikhem, your wives, your children, and your cattle, they remain on this side. He's taught them all of the priorities. If Moshe is the son, as our rabbis say, Yehoshua is the complete and total reflection of Moshe. Yehoshua is the Levana, is the moon. Two classes, and I believe for the present we've done enough in attempting to paint the picture of what Yehoshua is. From here on and further, I'm not sure yet which one. I think we're going to go to chapters 7 and 8 next week. I think 7 and 8. At least do me a favor, read 7 and 8. I may choose a few little things between 7 and 8, but remember what we want to do over here, if you really want to get benefit from this overview, you have to take out a Tanakh every day and read a few psukim and keep reading. If you keep reading, you'll get the total picture. We're just going to give you some of the keys to unlock the sefer. Okay.